A warm and friendly hello! Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Oops with myself, Greg Oops Peters, and now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. We're going to be joined in segment number two by our good friend Rob Donaldson. He does such great work with the show slash podcast Rob's Best Bets, and we're going to chat with him about how he's taking a look at the Final Four and also the edges that you can find in these final crown games, final NIT games. We're also going to be talking a little bit about what we're going to be getting with regards to these coaching moves here in the offseason, some of the moves that he's been liking, and a little bit of the paradigm shift that we're seeing in college basketball with those moves. In the final segment, I'm going to give you a little bit of a roundup of some of the news that we've seen in college basketball over the last few days. Not going to read off a big giant list of guys who have entered in the transfer portal. Again, I keep saying this on this podcast, you're going to have more guys enter in the transfer portal than actually return to school. So that's very much a defeatist effort, but I do want to be looking at these coaching moves, and we're seeing a non-Division I school move up to the Division I rank, so we'll get you guys caught up there. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one or two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter /X timeline at @GDon_D1. Keep in mind, letters M, naming does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other ways, find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it's very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. While I did not get any Twitter/X questions today, hey, we actually had some basketball on Thursday. Let's take a look back at it, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
Tulsa and Auburn are going to be your NIT final. For Tulsa, they get the job done, 74-69 over New Mexico. For New Mexico, they just were cold from 7-33 from the outside. Win the turnover battle, New Mexico does, 14-10. Both teams go 14-18 at the free throw line. Tulsa also wins the rebound battle, 39-37, but went 12-32 from three. You had a very nice performance off the bench from Jalen LaWall, who was able to spy the team with 10 points. You had a very solid performance from David Green with 13 points. Just a very, shall we say, well-dispersed effort here for Tulsa. Nobody scored more than 13 points, but you had five different guys get to at least 10, so they find a way to persevere, get the job done. And then for Auburn, they absolutely take it to Illinois State. They have been 2-14 against the spread in their last 16 games. They cover this one, though, 88-66. They're able to lambaste Illinois State in this one, as for Illinois State, they go 10-25 from three-point, but Auburn, they go 12-21 from the outside. Keyshawn Hall, he was the main man with 24 points, 6 rebounds. Taj Pettiford was able to throw in there 12 points, 5 assists for Auburn. They also win the turnover battle, 18-9. They played even up on the rebound front, 26-26, but they shoot 61% overall from the floor, so they do find a way to get the job done there. And then out there in the crown, you did see West Virginia in overtime take down Samford, 82-77 the final. West Virginia had the lead throughout much of this one, but Samford had built themselves an 8-point lead with about 4:12 remaining. They absolutely upchucked defeat from the jaws of victory for West Virginia. They are down 3 points with 3.5 seconds remaining. Samford tried to intentionally foul. They did, but they fouled on the three of Hunter off. He makes all three free throws to force overtime, and if you like me at Samford, that was just absolutely atrocious. West Virginia wins this game going 2-20 from three. Samford was 6-27 from the outside. Samford wins the rebound battle 47-37, but for West Virginia, they did win the turnover battle 12-6, and they didn't foul up three with a guy shooting a three, so that was great. And Huff, who made those free throws, he goes 11-13 at the free throw line, led the way with 21 points, and Abuka Corey, 34 points. Great effort, just completely squandered in this one. And then for Creighton, after a shaky first half, they persevere, get the job done against Rutgers, 82-69 the final. Hopefully at a 151 if you took the under, as we had 92 points in the second half after 59 in the first. For Creighton, 8-28 from three, as Josh Dix, 4-8 from the outside. Nick Graves, he dug the grave of Rutgers, 20 big points in this one. For Creighton, they win the rebound battle 40-38. Where they really did go wrong was losing the turnover battle 13-8, but Rutgers, they allow Creighton to get to the free throw line 24 times, and for Creighton, they go 20-24 at the free throw line, and Rutgers, not great shooting here, 24-65 from the floor, 2-14 from three. Tariq Francis did all that he could, 19 points, 3 assists, but not enough in this one. And if you're taking a look at college basketball, what we've gotten here in the last 7 days, so these are the big boy games that we have been seeing, lots of unders. We've had 8 unders to 4 overs. And then we've seen the underdogs really start to take it on the chin a little bit. Just five covers from underdogs over the last 7 days, 7-5 against the spread for favorites. So here in the latter rounds of these tournaments and in these games, we have been seeing the favorites start to come through a little bit more. Overall for the season, it has been an underdog season though. 2,956 and 2,785 against the spread. So 51.5%. And the under rate is at about 50.8%. 2,915 unders, 2,827 overs. So that's where we're seeing college basketball right now. That's where we're all getting trend-wise. Coming next, how about if we do chat it up with our good friend Rob Donaldson of Underdog Fantasy right here on Custom Cup Seats with myself, Craig Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Side edges college basketball season? Well, VSiN experts use CBB Analytics, the most comprehensive college basketball analytics platform in the world. See injury impact on and off data, clutch time performance metrics, first versus second half splits, and so much more. Utilize the promo code of VSiN, that is VSIN, to get $30 off and find your betting edge over at CBBAnalytics.com. That is CBBAnalytics, all one word, .com. For anyone that is new to VSiN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSiN because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSiN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Cubs Cousins with myself, Greg Hicks Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man as we've got Rob Donaldson aboard. He does such a great job over at the show/podcast, Rob's Best Bets, looking at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. I know he's doing a great job now on the baseball front, does tremendous work in football as well, and so much more. You're able to follow him on the old Twitter/X at RobDFB altogether. And Rob, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, Greg. And this is definitely one of those kind of bittersweet times in the season where it's coming to an end, man. I mean, we have three total college basketball games in terms of the NCAA tournament left, which makes you appreciate the NIT and the crown for still kind of going strong at this point in the year. And it's just, you know, I'm going to have action on a lot of these games because it's kind of sad to see it go.
Oh, absolutely. I'm right there with you. And just how do you take a look at what we're going to be getting in the Final Four? Because these are the tightest lines of the year. We have a full week to be able to dissect, break down these games, and I do think that it is really interesting to shape these up because it feels like in one game between Michigan and Arizona, you have, in my opinion, the de facto title game.
Right. I think you nailed it with that last point, and I know a lot of people are riding that same sort of narrative of, you know, Michigan-Arizona kind of feels like the championship, but I mean, with how UConn has been playing and just the miraculous comeback to come back from 19 down against Duke and hit that kind of shot, they could take on the winner of Michigan-Arizona and beat them, and it wouldn't truly shock me. And Illinois on the other side, I know that from a brand standpoint, from the coaching standpoint, a lot of people might be thinking, oh, well, you know, Brad Underwood's time is kind of running thin in terms of his longevity in this tournament. But they've been saying that since they played Houston, and they punked Houston. It was a definitive win where they out physicaled Kelvin Sampson and that Houston squad. That was so, so impressive. And so Illinois, they're one of those teams that I really think can also beat anybody that's left in this field, which just makes it so fun. I get it. The one seeds are battling in Michigan, Arizona. It's going to be a great game. I do think the winner of that game wins the title, but I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk, especially if that team is laying 7.5 or 8.5 against UConn or Illinois on the other side.
Yep, it is going to be really interesting to see what we get in terms of both of these Final Four games. And how about if we do start off with that Michigan versus Arizona game? Because what I've been saying about this game all along is that if you just have the best of the best from both of these teams, I feel like Michigan's best is just a hair better than Arizona's best. But I also do think that Arizona's been a little bit more consistent this year as well. I'm not sure how you see it, but personally, I landed on the side of Arizona because it feels like they might be just a little bit more well-rounded than Michigan.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't fault you for saying that. And I think ultimately from that standpoint, Arizona feels like it has the better athletes or the more imposing players. But Michigan has the experience and a lot of athleticism on their side to boot. And I mean, I don't think there's going to be a better one-on-one sort of matchup than Coa Pete and Yaxel Lendeborg at any point, you know, in college basketball the last 5 years. Because if you look at Coa Pete, he's somebody who's going to talk a little bit of ish. He's going to be up in your face. He's going to be physical. He's going to make it a statement that he's scoring on top of you. And Yaxel Lendeborg does the exact same thing. You know, it's like you have two Kobe Bryants of sorts kind of going up against each other. And who's going to reign supreme, or can one get in the other's head? We're going to find out really early in that ball game, which just makes me excited. But when you are talking about a freshman in Coa Pete, a freshman in Braden Burries, a younger lineup for Arizona that features a lot of young players, a lot of like lack of inexperience, I do tend to think that's going to favor a team like a Michigan and a Dusty May, who has made it farther than Tommy Lloyd at this point to kind of rein in those personalities, rein in those types of talented players. And so, yeah, it's a slight number delay. I'm probably just going to take the money line with Michigan, but I do think that Michigan is going to be the team that gets it done against the Wildcats here.
It is going to be a lot of fun to take a look at that game. The one thing that has me a bit off put by Michigan are the turnovers, but if they can keep things clean, they've got a chance to be able to get the job done there. And then in the other game, right now we've got UConn as about a 2 to 2.5 point underdog against Illinois. And I think that this one is so intriguing as well, because I honestly feel like the wrong team is favored. You mentioned it, the way that UConn has just been able to find a way. And yeah, they haven't necessarily been dominant all throughout the tournament, but the big thing for me is that with how many threes Illinois takes, I think that that's going to be a disadvantage playing in a converted football stadium. Want to get your thoughts here, because I do think that in a normal circumstance, I'd like Illinois a little bit more, but I think the venue itself is really to their detriment.
Yeah, and you know, and even to kind of add on to that point, the last time out when UConn beat Duke, and again, it was a miraculous sort of finish. They weren't the better team all day long, but it's about finding wins at the end of the day. Who cares about how it happened? And how it happened against Duke was Terrace Reed in the second half just bulldogged back to the basket, great finishes, great passes, just did everything. I mean, he was making free throws at an 80% clip out of nowhere. This is a guy who doesn't even come close to that number during most of the regular season, kind of building up to this point. And when you are looking at how UConn is going to be able to kind of beat Arizona in this game, it's going to be, you know, still leaning on Terrace Reed, but I don't think to the extent that they could against Duke, where Duke was very finesse and they do have some bullies down low, but not to the level of Illinois in terms of physicality. And so it is going to come down to those jump shot margins. And we have seen, you know, UConn and Illinois struggle in that regard so far in the NCAA tournament. But if you're playing the law of averages and just kind of looking at how UConn performed last time out, besides that last shot, they couldn't hit a single shot. And I do feel like that's just bound to correct itself and kind of take the burden off of Terrace Reed having to just be Superman down low. And so, yeah, you see a 1.5 type of line. It opened up as a 2.5 line for UConn. I tend to think that UConn, even just, you know, forget about the spread, I think they win this thing outright. I think there's a really good chance it's a great game, but I think UConn has more opportunities or more ways to beat you than Illinois does. And if Illinois wants to play the physicality down low battle, I'm going to ride with the guy that we just saw absolutely bully the crap out of Duke in the last round here.
Yep, and Terrace Reed, to your point, he out-rebounded Furman all by himself earlier in a game in the NCAA tournament, yeah. Albeit it was against Furman, but man, I mean, that guy has been absolutely tremendous, so I do think that that is going to be something that is going to be huge in this game, as Rob Donaldson, he does such great work with the show / podcast, Rob's Best Bets. He is joining me right here on Cusco Soups, and certainly it is big what we've got right now in college basketball with regards to Final Four, but we've got other games that are going down as well. We've got the NIT, we've got the Crown. How much do you take a look at these games, and have there been a few edges that you've been able to find here over the last week or so?
I view the NIT and I view the Crown in very much similar capacity that I do with like college football bowl games, where we're 100% dialed in on where the motivational angles lie. When you're looking at, you know, Baylor and just kind of looking at how their season went, I think you can find the motivation in the fact that it didn't go the way that they wanted. And they have a really proud program. They have a great coach and just a great culture that doesn't want them to go out the way that they did on the end of the season when they were getting bullied out of the Big 12 tournament. And so I think this crown is kind of a new leash on life for a team like a Baylor. I also think this crown tournament is a kind of final last hurrah for a team like a Creighton and McDermott, who, you know, maybe haven't really had, who, you know, is obviously on his final send-off here before he gives it up to Allen Huss, because this is a coaching legend, and they went 15-17 in the regular season. That's, you know, a far cry from what we saw with Dougie McBuckets and on Baylor Shireman and all the great teams that Creighton has had over the years. It would feel like a little bit of like a weird send-off if they didn't go out and just win this whole darn thing, or at least make a run at it. And so I am kind of looking again at those motivational spots. We'll see what happens in Creighton Rutgers tonight, but I tend to think Creighton is going to go out there and make a statement for their coach. And when you look at the NIT, it's very, very similar, where you have a lot of first-year head coaches, you have a lot of second-year head coaches left in the field who are trying to build that momentum for their program for the next season, and I don't think that can be just lost on you. I think you look at those motivational angles, and you ride them until you simply can't.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I think the motivation is so big when it comes to these smaller tournaments. It's much akin to what you get in college football bowl season, where obviously if you have a team in the college football playoff, there's no doubt that the motivation is going to be there. The non-college football playoff bowl games, you have to be gauging that. And I do think that Creighton is a team that's going to be on a mission. So I agree with you there. Watch, they'll lose to Rutgers before this uploads. But that said, I'm right there with you. I like that angle as well. So I do think that that's going to be fun to take a look at. And Rob, I do have to mention this as well, because we have seen a lot of coaching changes here over the last few weeks. We've only got a few games left. And just how have you taken a look at the offseason with regards to coaching changes thus far? Because I know you're a man out there in the great state of Iowa, and it's going to be really, really interesting to take a look at Northern Iowa without Ben Jacobson. That's going to be like a bizarro world right there. But how have you taken a look at this offseason? Because we've seen a lot of moves, and I feel like there have been some great moves being made. Meanwhile, some of these teams going with a guy that was an alma mater, like Raul Norag going on over to Butler, Justin Gainey on over to NC State. I just have question marks, because we've seen a lot of guys go back to their former school and just not have success.
Yeah, it's been a very, I don't even know how to kind of read into this offseason other than it's been very NIL focused, right? You're seeing a lot of almost quote unquote lateral moves, or kind of going from mid-major to mid-major. I mean, John Gross going to Charleston, obviously Charleston's a more attractive destination than Akron, Ohio, let's be clear. But it kind of speaks to the funding of that program and just the opportunity that John Gross is seeing in a mid-major at a school or at a conference rather that might be a tick below kind of the MAC in terms of how it's viewed on a hierarchy level. And, you know, to your point, you brought up Ben Jacobson. That's going to be bizarro world. He's been there for 25 years. I can't even ever imagine another head coach taking over the UNI helm, but Utah State's going to be in good hands. And heck, when you're factoring in the fact that it's going to be the new Pac-12 that they're going into, that could be a league that immediately is just on the map and really kind of asserting itself with multiple bids in year one, the way I think it, you know, it should be with how many teams that they're bringing in that are very, very competent and very, very talented. Yeah, I think when you look top to bottom, a lot of these programs kind of made the decision of, hey, we're going to part ways with a guy that maybe makes a lot of sense for, you know, the old status quo and maybe what we were going for in the past, but this is a new era and we're kind of pushing the envelope. We're trying to make something happen. I think you're seeing that with the decisions on firings, a guy like a Randy Bennett taking the Arizona State job, just the realignment, the NIL factor of the sport now. I mean, heck, we just saw John Andrzejczyk leave Campbell for, you know, insert, you know, assistant coach spot to be determined after a decent season at Campbell, specifically because of NIL investment. You know, we will see what the future holds, but that's kind of been the read of the offseason, is a lot of teams just trying to figure out where they stand in this new hierarchy of college basketball.
Yeah, it has been really interesting to take a look at that. The Campbell job, I thought, was really interesting, to say the least, and we shall see how some of these mid-majors are going to be doing moving forward. We'll see if more D2 guys get a crack at it as well. I know that St. Bonaventure brought in a really good Division II coach, so that's something that I always look to, and I think that that could be the way that some of these mid-majors rise to prominence, and the way that this podcast has risen to prominence is great guests like you, Rob. You do such an amazing job looking at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball all 12 months out of the year. So love to give people at home know what's all on tap for you and how people are able to follow along on social media and other platforms.
Well, hey, Greg, it's been a blast talking college hoops with you, even going back to, before the season even started, and, September and August and October. And I can't wait to be until we're talking about the bulk slate of games again in the future. But, riding this season out, for those who want to follow my bets on an everyday basis, Twitter/X at RobDFB, and also my YouTube channel, which is just my name, Rob Donaldson. But as always, Greg, I appreciate having you on, man.
It is always great to be able to get Rob aboard every single time he joins me. He lends such great insights and did so once again today. So big thanks to Rob for joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Coming up next, let's recap some of the coaching moves that we've seen in college basketball over the last few days. Your lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Rob Donaldson, who does such great work with the show/podcast Rob's Best Bets. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insights, did so once again today. So big thanks to Rob for joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. Now it's that time of the podcast that I give you a little bit of a roundup over the last few days of coaching news. I'm really not going to do the transfer portal update because I would be reading off hundreds and hundreds of names. I know there are some guys are trying to be able to commit elsewhere, and I will be having over 180 days to be able to sort through what we're going to be getting in the transfer portal. It's a long off season, so I have no fear that's going to be happening, but I've explained this on the podcast a few times. I will again. The amount of guys entering into the transfer portal is much larger than the guys not entering in the transfer portal. If you're a fan of a team, just assume that your guys are going to go into the transfer portal until they say otherwise. But that said, we did see Northern Iowa, who lost Ben Jacobson a little bit, shall we say, suddenly to Utah State, make a good hire, in my opinion. They're bringing on an assistant over from Iowa State, and one Mr. Kyle Green. He becomes the 26th coach in the history of Northern Iowa basketball, and he's been a big part of what Iowa State has been able to form. They stay within the state, and he actually did spend a little bit of time as an assistant over at Northern Iowa, most recently from 2012 to 2021, so he has served under Ben Jacobson in the past. You have to believe that he's going to do everything humanly possible to be able to try to keep as many of his guys on the roster as humanly possible, so I thought that that was a good move for them, even though he's not really had a lot of experience with regards to being a head coach. He's got a lot of experience with the program. For Siena, they have to move on to life without Jerry McNamara, and they're going to be looking to Nevada Smith. That's quite the name. 45-year-old who's going to be getting his first crack at a Division I coaching job, and Aina has spent a long time being a little bit of an assistant, being at some of the, shall we say, smaller conferences as well. He most recently was serving with Shaka Smart over at Marquette as an assistant over there. Spent a little bit of time on the Texas staff as well. Obviously, Marquette did not have the world's greatest season, but he's a pretty solid recruiter from everything I've seen, and I do think that it's going to be interesting to see how his, shall we say, NBA ties have been able to help him out as well, because he was a head coach for the Rio Grande Vipers of the G League, the Sioux Skyforce as well, so he's been a head coach, but not really at the Division I level. He also did a little bit of work at the D3 ranks as well. I believe that he was over with Eastern College, and he was also with Keystone and SUNY Canton, so he's got quite a bit of experience at the lower levels. Now he's going to be getting a chance with Siena. I think that that's a pretty solid hire for them as well, and then I think that this one is a pretty good one as well. And then we did see another piece of news as well, not involving coaches, but West Florida, the Argonauts of the Division II ranks, they are set to be joining the D1 level. They are now going to be a part of the Atlantic Sun, so this is going to be interesting. I think that this is going to be taking hold for the 2026-27 season. That would give us 366 Division I teams. I'm sure that the NEC is probably going to need to add someone as well, perhaps the America East, so we should be seeing a few of these smaller conferences adding a team or two. The Atlantic Sun, they add one in West Florida, so now they've got North Florida, they've got West Florida, they've got West Georgia, so they've got a lot of directional southern state schools, so they add another one there. And then this one was a little bit surprising, as for John Andrewchuk, he was the coach over at Campbell. Many people thought that this was actually a April Fool's joke, but he decided that he was going to be stepping away from Campbell, and I'm going to get the correct quote here so that way it's not taken out of context. But he said, and I quote, "Despite months of intense work and collaboration with AD Hannah Bazemore and our terrific athletics administration and several creative options that were proposed and thoroughly explored, there are no pathways that the institution will support to fund the program appropriately moving forward." He put that in a direct statement. Wow. Like, talk about not beating around the bush there. Very interesting, to say the least. His profile on Twitter/X still has him as the Campbell Fighting Camels coach, but it looks like he's going to be leaving to take an assistant coaching job over at Louisville. So I thought that that was very interesting as well. So a few tidbits from college basketball over the last few days. And if you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Heaps, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, LRCM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. A big thanks once again to our guy, Rob Donaldson, for joining me in the last segment. Coming at you guys every single day with picks and analysis on every game every day when we do have them. And once the regular season and the NCAA tournament is over, we're going to be looking at the transfer portal moves, all these coaching moves, and getting set for the 2026-27 season. There's 365 days this year. You're getting 365 podcasts. So I'll catch you once again tomorrow. Thank you.